Sí. Are we at 3:30? Ooh, not quite.
Joe, will Jeff be logging on?
Yeah, he should be.
Is Sue on?
Here.
I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, Sue. All right, is Ted here?
I am here.
All right. I guess we'll wait another minute. Hi, Sue, and then we'll get going.
That was sure a nice event Saturday night, Ted, and the whole team. That was great.
Yeah, I bet everybody had a really good time.
It was fun, and they did some things differently this year, as I'm sure you noticed, and I too thought it was fun. Michelle Watson turned out to be a pool shark. We didn't know that, but she won the pool tournament.
that doesn't surprise me,
which was kind of the big news of the day for me.
The fact that she lured everyone into it unknowingly. That doesn't surprise me. Okay, I think it's 3:30. And so we will call to order the Tuesday, January 17th meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee. And Sue is here and I'm here. So as we look at the agenda, take it away. What is the first thing on the agenda? IGHCP update.
Right. Diana, if I may, I'll just kick this off really briefly, but you will recall that about 2 years ago, Des Moines Water Works transitioned our employee health insurance to the IGHCP Trust. Mm-hmm. And we did that because, you know, for many, many years, historically, we were our own group and we had experienced some pretty high rate increases over the years. And then we partnered with the city and we continued to see actually quite a bit of volatility there. And then we found out that the city wasn't really including us, incorporating us into their group. They were considering us as our own group, sort of within their group, which resulted in that volatility. And we were just looking for a way to kind of stabilize our rates. And so we joined IGHCP, which is a health insurance trust. We've got a couple of years of experience with that now. I won't steal all of the thunder, but it's gone pretty well. And we just thought it was time to give the board a little bit of an update on our experience with that. And Jeff and Joe are here from Holmes Murphy, and they're actually gonna walk us through some of our experience there and then answer any questions you have. And I think Jeff, you're going to start us off.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you, Ted. So I'm Jeff Clayton. You'll see Joe Langle is also on here as well. Hopefully this will be fairly informal. If you have any questions as we go through this, feel free to ask. And then at the end, of course, we'll have some time to ask any follow-up questions as well. So Joe, you're in charge of the screen. So I guess you can go to, if you want to go to the next one. All right, so here's the overview today is you know, who is Holmes Murphy, if you're not familiar with us, then also just describing what is the relationship between us and the IGHCP Trust, which is the Iowa Governmental Healthcare Plan. And then we will also go over, again, how you're running today and some of the information we have about the upcoming renewal. So this is your Holmes Murphy team. So there's Jeff, I'm sorry, I'm Jeff, obviously, Joe and myself, and then Becky Hammond and Angie Nielsen are also involved. Joe and I are more of the big picture strategy ones. We work with a lot of groups that are in IGHCP, and Becky and Angie are more of the day-to-day people as service issues or different things would come up. The Holmes Murphy is located in central Iowa. We're now based in Waukee. So this is kind of a little overview of our footprint. Again, we're based here, but we have a good enough footprint. It kind of gives us access to some additional resources we wouldn't have if we were a smaller agency. At Holmes Murphy, Joe and I are the kind of lead a lot of the cities and counties and municipality groups. So we actually have more groups in this trust we're going to talk about more than any other broker in the state. So here's just some background. We've been the broker for the city of Des Moines for quite some time. And when we actually started working with the city of Des Moines, the waterworks at that stage had already moved the medical underneath the city of Des Moines plan. Why we've been the broker, we also then transitioned your life and disability coverages under the city, which has worked well. I think there's been a significant amount of savings. That's a lot is driven by volume. So joining something large like the city has been advantageous. In 2020, we first took over as the broker on your dental and vision plans. Those had never been incorporated into the city. So again, they were standalone. We took those over though, and then we negotiated some pricing discounts on those. And then in 2021, we moved your medical plan out of the city's plan and into the Iowa governmental healthcare plan, which is where you're at today.
Can I ask a question about this? Because I'm a little bit confused. Can you go back? This is Diane Munns. Yep. So we were we were with the city, and then we were with the city also on dental and vision, but we were outside the city of Des Moines plans. So we had savings, even though we were, I'm a little confused there. We had savings, yeah, even though we were with the city, but not really with the city.
So there's different things. So the thing is, you've had different things going on with all of them. Your dental plan and your vision plan have never been part of the city of Des Moines. They've always stayed separate. Now, I don't really know the history on why that is, but for some reason, those were never discussed to go into the city's plan. So for a time, there was nobody working on them like a Holmes Murphy. So that was the first piece that we were working with the waterworks independently from the city. We became the broker on those two pieces. And part of our job was to renegotiate the pricing, which we did. So those were never part of the city. The medical piece was already part of the city when we started to work with the city. So we weren't part of those decisions at the time. Just knowing the background, it was cost advantageous at the time for both the city and the waterworks to go into it, which eventually over time that kind of changed. And that's why we ended up moving you outside of it.
And so dental and vision, are they also a part of the Iowa governmental healthcare plan?
They are not. They are separate standalone pieces that are not part of any kind of trust.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. All right.
And then the life and disability, when we were first working with the city, you did have those by yourself. We didn't oversee them, but there was some discussions with the city. And from a price standpoint, it was advantageous to move you underneath the city plans. And those are still with the city. So they'll see, I'll get to this on another slide, but we do not believe there's any reason to pull that out. There's the difference than the medical, you know, it really is about volume, and you benefited from a price standpoint having them on there. So yeah, I'm doing the next slide. So those are with Voya, your life and disability plans, along with the city of Des Moines. The airport is also part of this. That is something we can always evaluate outside of it, but just, I can just tell you in general, when it comes to those kind of lines of coverage, if you can be part of something bigger like you are with the city, it makes sense to try to keep that. And the city has been agreeable to that relationship so far. And then since we have expanded the relationship, you know, we've been involved with employee meetings and compliance issues. So part of our role is, as things come up, changes in laws, things like that, we're making sure that the waterworks is meeting anything that needs to be done. And then when you have the open enrollment period each year, you actually have two different ones because the renewal dates don't totally line up, but we assist with booklets and communications with the employees and having meetings with your employees. So when the decision was made to start looking outside of the city of Des Moines, medical plan, again, this is going to focus just more on the medical plan going forward. We did look at all the different carriers that were out there at the time. There are actually some additional ones now, but at that time, the main ones were Wellmark and United Healthcare. We looked at both a fully insured and self-funded basis. So those are basically two different funding mechanisms. we really wanted to have you quote the IGHCP trust because we had moved so many groups into them because of the savings. But the Waterworks was a little bit unique in that technically you're not a group that is by default allowed to go into it. So by default, it's cities and counties that have been in this trust. Joe and I have been able to get exceptions over the years to get some other groups in, and we were able, because of our relationship, to get an exception for them to quote the Waterworks. When all the quotes came out, the best option was by far to join the IGHCP Medical Trust, and that was our recommendation, and that is where you have been for the last few years. So this next one kind of gives the renewal history of where you were at and like what was kind of prompting to start looking outside of the city. So one thing about the city that was a negative is the city essentially was deciding what they were going to pass along to the Waterworks as an increase. So that was an internal decision with the city. So we would meet with them regarding the entire renewal, and then they internally would decide what the Waterworks should get. So you can see the first few years, when you first joined 2015, it definitely made sense because there was a decrease. The renewals that were relayed in the following years were fairly low or minimal, 3 to 6, and then you got a 0 in 2018. But then in 2019, you can see it started to increase quite a bit. So the claims for the Waterworks had gone up quite a bit. And so I think there was some interest on both sides to start exploring other options. So I think, 2020, when you got the 22% increase, that really spurred wanting to look at other things outside of the city to see if there could be something better. So IGHCP, as I mentioned, ended up being the best choice. There was a jump in price, but it was significantly less than if you had likely stayed with the city. The first time you went into it, we actually had an 18-month rate hold. So the rates did not change for 18 months until 2022, when they went up 7%. And Joe will get into this a little bit more, but one thing that is nice about the IGHCP plan is, regardless of how you are running as a group, whether it be good or bad, every group in it gets the exact same renewal. So you'll see when we get to the claims information, you have benefited from being part of this from a claim standpoint. And this next upcoming renewal is going to be, you'll see it even more with the next upcoming renewal, which we'll get to in a moment, based upon the current claims information, how you're running. Any questions so far? Joe's going to start talking about some other things, but any questions so far on what I've talked about?
All right. So this just kind of shows an overview of how Holmes Murphy fits into this with the IGHCP. So as Jeff mentioned, we went to the entire market and looked at all the options available to the Des Moines Waterworks, landed on the IGHCP. So we manage the relationship between Des Moines Waterworks and IGHCP. Underneath IGHCP, the medical insurance is with Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. The trust itself has a consultant for some of the actuarial stuff and trust-wide recommendations. And then they also use third-party administrator employee benefit systems for partial self-funding. So I'll touch more on that in a little bit. But those are the three main partners inside of IGHCP. IGHCP has been around since 2005, and it's essentially just a 28E agreement with like-minded entities pulling together for the purpose of buying insurance. Since inception, the insurance carrier has been Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now, at a trust level, that could change. They go out to market every so many years, but for the entire time, it has been with Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Historically, eligibility has been limited to cities and counties with 50 eligible employees. And current enrollment, as we sit today, there's over 3,700 employee lives and 10,000 members on the plan. So much, much bigger than the city of Des Moines and Waterworks combined at the time. Some of the advantages of being in this pool, it's pooled risk for the purposes of renewal. Average increase over the last 15 years of this trust have been around 7%. The way it's underwritten, it's continually attracting new groups. So the Waterworks went in at their own rates. And then as Jeff mentioned, everybody gets the same increase. So you're underwritten based on what you deserve at that time. There's also discounts for being pooled at this group size. So Wellmark is giving IGHCP a price break because of these 10,000 member lives. The other nice thing is the renewals come out well in advance of the effective date. So we know the renewal around January 10th each year, even though the rate change doesn't go into effect till July 1st. Just an example of Waterworks is by itself as it was prior to 2015. Renewals come out between 90 and 100 days before the effective date. So we're almost 6 months before in this arrangement. The trust also utilizes parcels of funding, which helps build reserves in good years. It's very transparent and has enhanced reporting, something we are not receiving with the city of Des Moines. And every member inside IGHCP has one vote as it relates to the operation of the trust. So Des Moines Waterworks has one vote, just like the city of Council Bluffs has. Just quickly, here's the current membership. There are 14 counties, 19 cities. As we sit today, there's still one legacy school. And then kind of the other category, Council Bluffs Waterworks is in there along with Des Moines Waterworks. Just real quick, what is partial self-funding? So inside the trust, Des Moines Waterworks is buying a higher deductible, a less rich and lower priced plan from Wellmark. So it has higher out-of-pockets, maximums, and deductibles as well. And then we are partial self-funding. We are behind the scenes using employee benefit systems to reprocess Wellmark's claims, which decreases a member's responsibility for deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums. So the plan designs the employees are experiencing with IGHCP are similar in employee liability responsibility as they were prior to joining IGHCP. And then just a note, Des Moines Waterworks uses Bankers Trust to hold those medical reserves. This is specific to Des Moines Waterworks. So plan performance year to date, 2022, we've had $3.4 million in claims, over $3.4 million in claims, and premiums paid were just under $3.2 million. So the loss ratio for every dollar you paid to Wellmark through the trust, Wellmark has paid out almost $1.09 in claims. So just for reference point, a target loss ratio would be between 75 and 80%. That allows the carrier to produce ID cards, provide customer service, things like that. So a loss ratio over 100% isn't ideal. Your partial self-funded claims year to date are at $325,290. The reserve is sitting at $8,743. And just for reference point, it was at $65,556 at the beginning of the year. I also want to note, so as Jeff mentioned, everybody in the trust gets the same renewal. So the kind of the theory is we take turns having good years and bad years. You can see in 2021, the Des Moines Waterworks loss ratio was at 71%. I did make a note there. Things kind of started going south a little bit from a loss ratio perspective in December of 2021. Your loss ratio for that particular month was 144. So it's kind of rolled over into 2022, some of these high claim years.
Joe, can I ask you a question on that last slide?
Yeah.
The PSF reserve balance, walk us through what that is, please.
Yep. So as the premium is broken down into a Wellmark premium, there's some admin components, and then there's a partial self-fund. So the partial self-fund is to pay those claims between, I'm going to skip back one slide, to pay those claims between the higher deductibles that we're buying from Wellmark. So you can see I have there listed a $5,000 deductible and a $7,350 out-of-pocket maximum. The Waterworks has three plan offerings. Some employees have a $1,250 out-of-pocket. So it's the difference between those higher amounts we're buying from Wellmark and what the employees are actually realizing for their medical benefits.
Thank you.
Yep. So all that being said, you know, kind of doom and gloom, if you will, the loss ratio wasn't great. Oops, great this year. But the IGHCP renewal is 3.19%. So the increase from being in this trust, all groups get the same increase. It's 3.19% on that fully insured premium. We do expect a little bit bigger than a 3.919% increase on the partial self-funded portion because that reserve was down a little bit. We are currently performing some additional actuarial analysis on that. Now that we have almost two full years of claim histories, you guys are much more credible and we can more accurately predict what those claims might be in the future. But increase still far below what we're seeing in the medical inflation world or trend world. Depending on who you ask, medical inflation with pharmacy and RX included is anywhere between 5 and 10%. Just a note, I mean, as you guys probably know, with a loss ratio of over 100%, you are certainly better off being in IGHCP, then you would be standing alone. We'd be facing a much higher renewal. And then there's a board meeting that I know Doug and some of the team members are attending. That's on February 2nd and 3rd this month. Again, every member in IGHCP has one vote. And then just lastly, you know, we are solely independent, so we're not beholden to IGHCP, but we can still evaluate all the other medical options on the table. But we do believe this is a pretty fair renewal based on how everything's running, or initial preliminary renewal numbers. And that is kind of our overview today. We are obviously available to answer any more questions. Jump back to any slides.
So I have another question. So if your claims routinely exceed 100%, can they kick you out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Since 2015, nobody's ever been kicked out. So it, unfortunately, it's not like workers' comp where maybe sometimes bad behaviors or bad business practices lead to higher claims. In the medical world, cancer doesn't discriminate necessarily, some of those things. So really they're not looking to, you know, you have a bad claim here, you're not going to get kicked out.
Yeah. And I would add to that too, there's been no discussion about kicking you out. If you were running like at 300, 400%, I think they'd probably be having some discussions with us about your group, but it wouldn't be out of the blue. But you're not running great, but you're not at that kind of level. And the other thing is the Waterworks is one of the larger groups that are in this pool. And that's to their benefit. You know, that's helpful to the trust because those numbers definitely help them with Walmart overall to reach certain thresholds. So I absolutely have no concerns about that. We have a good relationship, very good relationship with IGHCP. If that ever came up, I think Joe and I would have a lot of notice about it. So that's a very great question. Actually, Kevin, we were like previewing this, but I would have absolutely no concerns that that's a possibility right now. Other questions from anybody?
Well, if not, I guess I'd like to thank Joe and Jeff for joining us today and walking us through that. It is pretty early in our relationship with IGHCP. We've only been in there a couple of years, but thus far, it accomplished our goal, which was stabilizing our insurance rates, both for the Waterworks and for our employees, and we're pretty happy. But we'll keep the board informed as we move forward. But we certainly have no plans to look for another insurer at this point. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And if anything comes up afterwards, feel free to reach out to us, I guess, either through Doug or Ted or Amy. But certainly if other questions happen, we're happy to answer those.
Very good.
Thanks, Joe and Jeff.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready to move on to the second agenda item, changes to board policy.
We are. And just if you'll allow me, Diane, to provide a little background there. This takes us back to specifically some questions we had from the board, some encouragement we had from the board to look for more efficient, more effective ways to do some of our contracting and our professional services acquisitions. We've been, as you know, struggling through the last couple of years with finding contractors, getting them to come on the timelines that we needed them to do, having single bidders on projects and especially designs after studies and that kind of thing. And so we actually Lindsay presented to the board at a committee meeting here a month or two ago about some different methods that we could potentially use for professional services acquisitions and then for contracting some of our, what I would call recurring non-public improvement maintenance projects. And so what we have here today is proposed updates to the board policy manual that would help us implement those suggested or recommended changes. And so Lindsay is gonna walk us through what those proposed changes are. We can have some discussion and then it would be our plan to bring those changes to the board for approval later this month. So that's that's kind of where we're at. We've already seen a presentation on just exactly what the proposals are. So we're focusing more on the policy manual changes needed to effectuate those changes. But Lindsay, I'm going to let you take it from there, and then we'll see what questions we have.
So can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. We'll go there. Okay, so in the packet for this meeting, we included kind of an outline of the edits that we're suggesting. And I'm just gonna, I have a little PowerPoint I'll go through to kind of describe each section and then kind of what we're changing and why. So kind of the first point I wanted to make was just the public improvement part. That's kind of that first section. 611 is staying the same. So any public improvements, we follow the chapter 26 of the Iowa code, and we would continue to do so. So the public hearings, you know, all those things that you're used to, those will stay all the same. So that language has not changed or anything like that. The second part is on these non-public improvements. So we added a new section, and I should just add, you know, we worked with legal to work on these edits, you know, engineering and legal work together to make these changes. But this section 611.2, we thought it would be good to talk about how we're going to handle like those maintenance and repair projects. And so if it's over that CEO's authority, we'll competitively bid it. And we basically said we'll look at qualifications and rates and everything like that, and we'll get at least more than one bidder. And then we'll recommend to you, to the board, to enter that contract. So we'll still be bringing those, you know, to you guys for approval. And, you know, with the justification like you're normally used to seeing, it's just kind of getting rid of a little bit of the formality of a public hearing or things like that. So then
can you remind us what the CEO is spending?
100,000.
Thank you.
Yep. So then on ones that are less than that, it says we have, the CEO will have some discretion, but again, we'll, you know, look at qualifications and everything on that. One thing we put in here was that there's an option to deviate from procedures. And the reason why we put that in there was like, you might have an OEM on equipment that you have to use, you know, to do a maintenance project or something like that. So we just said, you know, if we have reasonable justification, we would bring that to the board and get it approved. So that's what that was about there. And I put here on just some example non-public improvements so you guys could get a feel for what we're talking about here. And like basin rechainings that we bring to the board every, you know, pretty much every year, we do one basin rechain as just a maintenance upkeep preventative thing. We do well rehabs and like our tank inspections and cleanings, we're thinking would fall under this non-public category because it's really maintenance and repair and upkeep, you know, on our infrastructure. And one thing we'll look at is possibly doing those like multiple year, because, you know, we have a schedule of what tanks or whatever that we're going to do in the future. And so we can try to get more contractor interest by packaging that together. And it'll actually help because it'll populate their schedule into the future and kind of build some more relationships and familiarity with our facilities. And then the less admin, you know, on those projects. So that would be the intent of how this non-public improvement would be utilized.
I want to ask a really dumb question. So sure. What's the difference between public and non-public? I mean, I look at these things and I think, why are they non-public?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's actually, if you look at the presentation I did in December at the planning committee, I gave a definition that came out of the Iowa code of what a non-public improvement is. And it really is, it excludes maintenance and repair projects related to infrastructure is what it says. So like, and so basically this is how it would fit, but I would tell you like equipment repairs and maintenance are non-public improvement. If you start upsizing equipment, like building capacity, that is a public improvement. If you are upsizing lines, you know, those sort of things, those would not be a non-public improvement.
And Lindsay, okay. could I offer a couple of examples, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if we decide that we need a new water tower in our system and we build a new water tower, that is a public improvement. It's new, it wasn't there before, it's adding capacity to the system, that's a public improvement. We have to go through the whole public hearing process. But if we want to paint a tower that's already there, that, you know, that's not a public improvement, that's maintenance of existing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that would be a non-public improvement. And I don't even know if it's an improvement, but it's not a public improvement. By the same token, if we want to install water main where there is no water main today, that's a public improvement. But if we want to replace an 8-inch water main that's just old and it's been breaking, and we want to replace it with an 8-inch water main, not a public improvement. That's maintenance, repair, replacement. Mm-hmm. And so public improvements, there's some standards. You have to go through that 28E finding that there aren't facilities available for rent or sharing. You have to do a public hearing. You have to do all those things. But if it's already there and you're just replacing it or painting it or maintaining it, you don't have to go through those steps. And it saves us a lot of administrative time to just do what we're supposed to do as opposed to doing those extra steps.
I just think it's the terminology that throws me off. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say painting a water tower is a public improvement just from terminology. I understand the distinction that you're making. I just think the terminology that they used it doesn't make sense.
Diane, the reason we drafted it that way was to try to keep it evergreen with any developments in the code or cases.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm just going back to that. Whoever wrote that, I don't think I would have put it that way.
Yeah. Well, to some degree, this is the board policy manual. So, you know.
No, I got it.
Okay. Well, what I was going to suggest is if there's an alternative term you want to use to describe this category of projects.
It needs to tie to what's in the code. I think my beef is with the people who wrote the code.
Not with Waterworks staff, right, Diane?
Right.
Lindsay, I do have a question for you. I noticed one of our newer board members is on. Refresh our memory, if you would please, on the CEO spending authority. That level is what?
100,000, yeah.
Okay, and at one time it had been 50 and we increased it to 100. Are we at the right level on that? I mean, as you see projects coming through, because I notice you're recommending with appropriate detailed justification, we could deviate from that process. Is 100,000 the right amount? That's kind of what I'm curious about.
Well, I mean, just in my opinion and my background, it's low, I think, but you know, I don't know all the history here at Des Moines Waterworks. But I would say, I know from just like when I was at Iowa State, you know, we had a really low threshold and then it just kind of continually crept up because it's harder to do things for not, you know, that much money anymore. But that's just my background, my opinion. So
I'll share that is one of the reasons, one of the issues of why I wanted the rest of the board to kind of hear this presentation. Is to, I don't know if I'm recommending anything one way or the other, but just kind of to hear the route and the path that we're taking and examine things like that in the process.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, I was just going to share that we didn't consider a spending authority. We didn't do any evaluation of that, but we certainly could do some evaluation of what spending authorities are. You know, and other organizations our size or other organizations with the kind of capital needs that we have. I suspect that we would find 100,000 is kind of on the low end. of that, but we could certainly do some investigation and share and propose what we think is appropriate if the board has is open to that.
Well, and I'm not bringing it up because I think you're recommending a change. I appreciate what Andrea is saying, because when we look at what it costs on all of these things we bid, nothing is ever at 100,000. And so I appreciate where Andrea is going. We'll wait for more direction from our chair.
Fair enough.
And one thing with this code, these policy changes is we don't say what that spending authority is. So even if you guys decide that we need to change that amount, you know, this doesn't say what it is in this portion that we're modifying.
Thank you.
And I don't know if this is the appropriate place, but I don't think it would hurt to do that investigation and at least have that information available for a future conversation.
We can put that on the to-do list, Andrea, and bring it back to the board at a future date.
Great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any questions on just this non-public improvements? Otherwise, I'll switch kind of gears to consultants. You guys are ready for that. So as far as consultants, so basically there's a section 617 right now in your board manual that just says that anything over the CEO spending authority, you guys would approve any consultant agreements over that amount. So we've modified that a little bit. Basically, we will do that for single projects. We'll do competitive proposals, and we put in a caveat that we could do a request for a proposal or a request for qualifications with a negotiation of fee and scope, basically. So a lot of the times it's hard to wrap your arms around exactly what that scope of work is. Mm-hmm. And so you might hire them just to do a study to start with. And so you'd work with the consultant to kind of line up that level of effort and what that fee would look like. So that's why we put the RFQ process in there. Or if we can define the whole project, you know, we can do an RFP and get that set amount, but we wanted that capability to do that. And again, it would be competitive where we would look at multiple consultants and get, you know, qualifications and get that competitiveness. And then we would just bring that to you guys for approval. So that's really not a change besides the fact that we could do that RFQ and the fee scope kind of as a negotiation. And then we just added some language in there about if the fee is not over the authority, then we can, you know, do the best interest of Des Moines Water Works. One thing we added here, which this next statement is talking about hiring for the study, and then we can do amendments to go on to design. And we've had that happen, you know, with like HDR on the capacity where they did the preliminary design, but then we had to do an RFP to go out for the design. And in this instance, it would allow us to just work with them to negotiate the scope and fee and do an amendment to their current agreement, because you've already taken care of that competitiveness upfront. But we would bring that, if that amendment was over the CEO's authority, then we would bring that to the board and they would approve it. So a couple examples I put in here to kind of just describe what we would look at is like on our CIP plan, we have that CO2 PAC expansion. You know, our intent would probably be to do like an RFQ process, hire somebody to do a study. And then, you know, as long as we were happy with their performance and everything, then we would get an amendment to, you know, continue on design. That study would help kind of identify costs of the project, scope of work, do some planning, that sort of thing. So that would be kind of how we would approach that project, those bigger projects. The distribution building improvements is another one that I thought of that we would probably follow that similar thing, because you'd have some planning, kind of have to get your arms wrapped around what exactly you want to do. And then you have that scope of work identified a lot easier, and it's easier for the consultants to give you a fee based on what you're asking them to do, because really their fees are based on their level of effort. So, and then the filter plant was another one. We did an RFP to do a study for the filter plant rehab, and C.D. Smith did that work. And so they did a really good job. And, you know, to keep that project moving, you know, the intent would be to go get a proposal from them to continue on with that project. Okay. We put in here about kind of that same appropriate detail justification, if it's in the best interest. And some examples what I wanted to focus on was just like the Hickman feeder main. That is a DOT project. Snyder Associates is already working with them on this interchange for Hickman and I-35. And the intent would be that we would just work with them to just basically for timelines, for collaboration, that sort of thing. It makes sense. It doesn't make sense for us to hire somebody else. And we have that happen on some of the City of Des Moines projects as well, where they already hired the consultant and they're already doing like a street project. And it just makes sense for us to work together, and you're going to have the best product if you do that, rather than trying to combine consultants and their work. It just makes it things easier. So that's why we put that in there. So that's kind of on the just, you know, single project or one of the bigger projects, how we would handle it. And then if you listen to my
presentation. Can I ask a question? Can you go back one?
Absolutely. Whoops.
So,
shoot, sorry. There we go. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay. So when you say with appropriate detail justification, yeah, the utility may deviate if it's in the best interest of the utility and approved by the board, is that prior approval or is it post?
So typically, how I've done it in the past would be like in the board memo when we're asking for approval for, because you know it's probably going to come to the board anyway because it'll be over 100,000. I would put justification of why they were selected in that.
So it's prior.
So it's kind of simultaneously, right? When I'm coming to ask you for approval to for agreement, I'm going to say we decided to, you know, stay with Snyder because, you know, the City of Des Moines is working with, you know, and I would put that in the justification in that memo that you guys see.
Question, Lindsay. So on these projects with the city, which is what most of these are, or the DOT or county, mm-hmm, we always come to the board in advance of the construction and ask for permission to reimburse the city or the county. So that's, we already do that. And so you envision that at that time when we come to the board to request permission to reimburse, and you know that could be $1 million that we're reimbursing, we would also say we want permission to reimburse the city for this this water main work that's going to be in their contract, and we've also decided to use their same consultant to do our water main design, and then the board could authorize all of that at once.
Yeah, that's how I've seen it done, is basically if there was a reason why we wanted to stick with a certain consultant, we would put that in for the board just as, you know, this is the justification of why. Or we followed the RFP procedure, you know, like, because like even I'm thinking when we go for a PSA for let's just say for HDR, I put that we did an RFP and we went through this process and we got, you know, one proposal this time, but, you know, I would put, so we usually give some justification of why we want to use that consultant.
Usually when we are requesting permission to reimburse, the design is done and the project has been bid. So Diane, I think in answer to your question, this is kind of after the fact, we're just letting you know that we use the city's consultant to do the design. Now it's been bid and we want permission to reimburse the city for all of that. Are you comfortable with that? Was that your question?
Well, I was just trying to understand the process, whether at what point we came into it. Whether it was after the fact, over, prior approval.
If it's over 100,000 though, don't they have to approve it before you start working with them on the design?
If the design itself is over 100,000, yeah, we would have to get permission from the board.
So this is agreements over the CEO spending authority, right? Okay. So those agreements that come to the board, they're coming to the board anyway. So you would put justification at that time.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
So Diane, if you had concerns about the costs associated with the consultant at that point, the board could decide not to approve the selection in light of the justification that Lindsay or engineering provides. And you could say, no, we want you to go out and get quotes because we think that's too expensive.
Okay, so it hasn't already been spent at that point. Okay.
Okay. So I'll change horses and talk about just multiple small projects. If you watch that presentation, this was on like the IDIQ or indefinite scope. Is what I call it, indefinite scope agreements. But we put on here about using master service agreements. And basically we would do an RFQ process because you can't get proposals because you don't know the scope of work, right? You're going to utilize them on multiple smaller projects. But we put in language that if we do this RFQ before we were to go into get an agreement with these people, it would come to the board for approval. So, you know, we would give the justification of why we wanted that contract. We envision multiple disciplines and multiple consultants because you want some selection because, you know, if you have a project you need to do that in that certain discipline, they might be busy and not have people. So you have to have a couple to choose from. And we put a time limit of 5 years in this in the board policy manual, and we put in projects need to be less than $1 million. So basically how it works is you get all this upfront administrative things completed. So you have their certificate of insurance, you have their rates, you have the agreement signed. And then if you have a specific project that you want them to work on, you contact them and you get a proposal from them, you know, going over what scope of work, and then they give you their estimated fee. And it's a, you know, not to exceed fee based on hours, and you already have their hourly rates that you've agreed to. So it just kind of makes it a little bit quicker. You can get them started on something a lot quicker. And then you don't have to walk multiple consultants through that project, or, you know, it just saves some time and efficiencies. So I put some examples of just where we might use that. So like roof replacements might be a good fit, you know, build some building improvements or cathodic protection. Those are kind of the projects that, you know, we'd be looking at on our capital plan. And really how it works is you have this longer term agreement with them. So they get familiar with your requirements, you know, for like Des Moines Water Works. They get familiar with their facilities, and you basically use them more like an extension of your own staff because you might have a lot of projects that you can't use all, you know, your staff don't have time. And so you can kind of use them as needed to get through some busier times when you have lots of projects, which, you know, obviously with our CIP plan and having a very large goal there, this will help facilitate that.
Real quick, Lindsay, I'd just like to offer that, you know, you put the small sample of projects here. I just looked at the master list. We have almost like 40 projects that are sub-$1 million. And, you know, this master service agreement is, as she said, you know, an extension of our staff. It's going to allow us to, you know, really attack those projects the right way. So this is a small sample of the projects, but the list is pretty significant.
Yeah, I just want to go ahead.
I have a question on that. And, you know, I cannot even imagine, Andrea and I are texting back and forth here. I can't even imagine the administrative savings we're talking about here. And maybe we don't even want to put a pencil to it because it's pretty massive. So Lindsay, thank you for bringing this to us. But what about on the cost side? If they know that we're going to have this long-term contract, aren't we going to get better pricing as well or not? I'm just curious what your thoughts or experience on that would be based on your background.
I think that it's a win-win situation for both us and the consultant, because obviously we're entering this agreement with the consultant. They want to do a good job for you, first of all. So they're going to, you know, spend the time, get the documents the way they need to be, because, you know, they want you to stay with them, right? You also build that relationship and trust. And so, I mean, they're going to charge you for what it costs them, right? But once they start getting familiar with your facilities, it's going to be quicker, right? Because once they do one project for you and kind of know what those requirements are, then you get more efficient. You know, if you keep going to different ones every time, there's a learning curve. And so I do think that it would take longer. And so there could be definitely savings, and not just on the consultant side, but then on the Des Moines Water Works side too, you know? So that's why I said it's kind of win-win.
I have a question about the flip side of that. And that is, if you have the possibility of amendment in there, are you going to get good initial bids, or are you going to get maybe lowball bids to get the bid initially?
So Diane, the when we do these indefinite scopes, you get qualifications more than rates. I mean, they do provide you with rates so you can utilize that to compare. But really, you're wanting the people who are qualified to do the work.
Okay.
And I would just offer, like, I think we had like 15, 20 indefinite scope agreements. So we had a lot because we were trying to do a lot of that work up front and then have them, you know, to be able to choose from when we had projects going on and just made things a lot quicker. But I mean, it's all effort and time. And honestly, if you try to do a scope of work and you're not really exactly sure what that scope of work is, they're going to change their question marks into dollar signs because they have risk. And they're going to try to cover themselves. And that's where even, you know, when you do these amendments, it's like it's more defined, right? So they can put a better number on it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep. So then we just put in here, we already do this, but we wanted just to be transparent that we're going to be providing the board, you know, our list of agreements that we typically do in your board packets every month, so you can see, you know, who we're having agreements with and things like that, and how it's split up and whatnot. And one thing I should just offer is these master service, some people call them on call, some people call them indefinite scope, but you know, really it doesn't say they're entitled to the work or anything like that. It's just that you have all that in place, so when you do need them, you can turn things around faster and it makes things quicker and simpler. So just, that's all I really have. Besides, I just wanted to summarize, you know, we're trying to, you know, improve efficiencies, but also, you know, try to, you know, attract more contractors and, you know, trying to do things what others are doing already. Obviously we work with legal on these edits, and at the meeting, you'll have, you know, the proposed edits in the manual, so you can see those, and just that this will help us in engineering be more successful in our execution of our CIP plan, and then just Des Moines Water Works, allowing them to be more successful in reinvestment of their facilities and more nimble that way. So any questions I can answer?
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe we could put something in the system to have you come back next January and give us a report on your experience with these changes and how you thought they worked, and if there was something else that you needed.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, Mike, what do you, I think that's
we would welcome that, you know. Yeah. We're, you know, just to underscore a couple of things Lindsay finished with there, you know, I think the challenge up here in engineering is pretty steep. and maybe us recognizing that has honestly come with Lindsay's arrival, some of the questions from the board in the last year. So these things that, you know, have been proposed, these stand to be very beneficial, but we would love to come back in a year's time and say, here's what's going well. And if we think there's some adjustments we need to make, you know, we could offer those up. So we think this is an excellent opportunity for us to do some things better, and reporting back on that would be no problem.
Great. Anybody else?
I just wanted to thank Lindsay for giving this presentation twice. It's just a really, it does answer or lead to the answers of a lot of questions and discussions that the board has been having. And so I think I really wanted to ensure that everybody got to truly hear be part of that conversation. So I appreciate you taking the time and the rest of the staff taking the time to entertain my request to do it again.
Yep, happy to answer any questions or anything we're here for, you guys.
Yep. Thank you, Lindsay. I think the next thing on the agenda is it CEO remarks?
It is, Diane. I don't have a lot to add. I think we had two great presentations today, but I will offer that I truly appreciate Lindsay as a new person offering ideas that she thought could benefit the utility. Mike and the rest of his team kind of being open-minded to those potential changes, embracing that, working with John to get it put together, and also the board for being willing to accept some change and to put the faith and trust in the engineering group that they're going to use this newfound flexibility to the utility's benefit. So thank you all for that. I'm excited, frankly, that this is the kind of creative change we need to do our jobs better and to serve our customers better. And I think I'll close with that, Diane.
Okay. I guess, is there anyone on the line that would like to speak to the board at this time? Okay, anything else anybody wants to bring? Hearing nothing, I think we'll adjourn.
Very good.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Bye.